music's still going. Good evening. My name is Ingrid Castle, and welcome to In Defense of Humanity on the 6th day of August, 2016. Our program, In Defense of Humanity, is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species while accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and businesses built upon, is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on our planet. Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women. Well, tonight I have a special guest for you. Al is actually on vacation, and I know most of you are listening to her be the primary speaker on our show, but we do have an exciting guest, and I'm really honored to have Pat Shannon talk about the history and future of money on our show tonight. And I wanted to give you a little bit of background. A lot of people don't know how infamous of a scholar Pat Shannon is. They maybe have heard him on a couple RBN broadcasts, but I'm just going to go ahead and read a little bit of a bio so you can get to his website and know a little bit more about him. His search for truth, Pat Shannon's search for truth, was set in motion 50 years ago when he started examining the other side of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and he has been a valiant truth seeker ever since. And through the years, he discovered that Americans have seldom been told the whole truth about anything of consequence. I think we all agree with that. And he also witnessed the controlled mainstream media continually pumping out false information on the JFK assassination. So he wrote his latest book to correct the record. You know, at the 50-year anniversary, he decided to write the JFK assassination and the uncensored story of the two Oswalds, which presents evidence and facts seldom heard or seen in print. And his amateur sleuthing turned professional this is early on in his career after the 1983 murder of Gordon Call by the FBI and U.S. Marshals in North Dakota and Arkansas. In the 1990s, Shannon was hired by Chuck Harder as an investigative reporter for the People's Radio Network and covered such high-profile cases as the federal attacks at Ruby Ridge, Waco, and on the Montana Freeman, as well as the FBI cover-up of the Oklahoma City bombing. So Shannon went on to produce a two-hour documentary of these facts, OK City Bombing, the forerunner to 9/11, which is still available on his website on DVD. For two decades, Pat Shannon has been an investigative reporter for Media Bypass magazine and the newspaper The Spotlight, which is now the American Free Press. And he's the author of 8 popular books, which he sells on his website. It's the Independent News International World Report, and to get to the website, you go to INI, for Independent News International, INI, worldreport.org. And if you were to read any one of his books, you will understand that Pat Shannon is quite aware of the power of what Al refers to as the money monsters and why they gained control of the judicial branch of government from the early beginnings of our country. And I want to, without further ado, I'm going to welcome Pat Shannon to In Defense of Humanity. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Ingrid. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. You know, I was looking at your website, at your latest news report. I actually wanted to start with, you know, because nearly every day you're putting out an excellent article on iniworldreport.org, and there's some intense breaking news that just happened that you posted, and I wanted you to share that with our listeners because I'm not sure if any other radio show host actually shared that today. It could have happened, but it's pretty big news to me.
Well, first of all, let me correct the site. It's .com, INIWorldReport.com. It was .org in the beginning, and I didn't realize it might have still been stuck in there somewhere. But we changed it to .com to get rid of a bunch of the dashes and stuff, and it's much easier to remember, you know, for people to remember, INIWorldReport.com. But, yes, we do updates there almost every day of the suppressed news. I have coined the term CMM, controlled mass media. And the which piece are you talking about?
Which piece of McCain's treason?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I just stuck that up there earlier today. I've lost my, temporarily, my web mistress, as I call her. I can't very, very well call her a webmaster. But sorry about that phone call. The news, I just got it today myself. And finally, yes, indeed, people should pull that up maybe during your first commercial break and have a look. Because it's shocking. It's something, once again, that all of us who have been paying attention to RBN and the other alternative media over the years, we're not shocked about this at all. But I'm extremely enthused that we have the evidence. Now, here he is recording a recording that was dug out of the National Archives in Washington, apparently recently, and somebody has gotten a hold of it and posted it on the net. And here he is bowing down to the, you know, you might want to cue that up and play it, Ingrid. Can your producer do that? Not at this moment,
well,
but before the hour's over?
We would have to, I don't even know how to say, he would have to grab it off the internet because I don't have all that, all those tools.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty shocking. Breaking news, John McCain's 1969 Tokyo Rose propaganda recording released. From the National Archives, showing that he was a traitor who turned against his own country. It's right there. And,
several of his colleagues in the Hanoi Hilton have reported this over the years, and I'm sure you've seen it on the net, too. But here's the proof. McCain talking in his own voice, licking the feet of his oppressors and telling the world how bad he was for killing innocent Vietnamese and Hanoi and by bombing from his plane, and then he was captured, and how well he was treated, and by the wonderful doctors and milk. I mean, it was treason.
Absolutely. Well, we sold for many years Missing Presumed Dead, a DVD that detailed his treasonous actions. And anyway, Not everyone seems to know this information. And I think I even sent out my last copy, my personal copy, to someone that really needed to view it, you know, because I couldn't believe that they would even stand behind such a, you know, schmuck of a guy. But anyway, but yeah, that's pretty big that it's right there, you know, it's just the whole GOP has got to be, you know, in horror over this being released like it is right now, just before the presidential election. But anyway, well, the topic is the history and future of money. That's our topic of our show, Pat. So I wanted to go right into the beginning, if you would, and share with our listeners some of your research right back with the Kennedy assassination, because I know this has been a huge thing from the very beginning of our country, the, you know, having our right to be able to coin our own money, and how the central bankers have been, you know, chomping at the bit from the very beginning to take that power away from us.
And of course they have. I'll tell you, I'm going to start with the present, and then I'm going to jump back. But talking That's about right. the Kennedy assassination and all the other things that I have investigated and sat in on at the federal trials and listened to FBI agents lie under oath. I keep you take even the electronic vote fraud, even these false flags, the Boston Marathon and Sandy Hoax, and some of these others that have gone on even more recently, Orlando. Tell me how can 300 people be in a nightclub in Orlando and 100 of them get shot and not one of the other 200 has a cell phone camera? Give me a break. But how can these things be pulled off without legal tender? I have said for three decades now or more that legal tender is the root of all modern evil. Now, if we go back to the beginning of the 1790s and following the Constitution and the Coinage Act and these sorts of thing. By the way, counterfeiting was a capital offense in 1793. You got caught counterfeiting the gold and silver coin, they hanged you, which I think is still a pretty good idea. But the problem is the federal statutes on Title 18 on the books now banning counterfeiting do not make counterfeiting a criminal act anymore. Did you know that?
No, I actually didn't.
Well, few people do, but it's illegal counterfeiting that's against the law. Now, why would they write it that way? I can think of only one reason, because the Fed's doing the counterfeiting, and that's legal, but you must not, or you go to jail. It's yours, it's illegal.
Right.
Right there in the federal statute. Anyway, here's my point. In the 1790s, there was, and the Constitution actually, but there was such a thing as keeping, as you well know, keeping the Washington, D.C. federal government small. And the way that was managed was the states funded Washington by something called apportionment. Any federal bill that cost anything had to be approved by the states, and then it was divided up equally by the states and then equally by the population of those states. So in other words, California's got 20 million people and Mississippi's got 2 million people. The tax bill, of course, was 10 times as high than to California, but they had 10 times as many people to swallow it. So this was apportionment that funded Washington. Now, I ask you and the world, how many of these false flag operations, how much of this electronic vote fraud, how much of all these things that are being funded by counterfeit money printed by the printing press, how much of this could have actually been accomplished if the states were funding Washington, D.C. by apportionment?
It wouldn't have happened at all.
That's right. And not to mention the murders that go on, these hired assassins and everything else. That just would not have happened. It could not have been funded. So that's the real power of legal tender, of what can be done with it behind the scenes. So this is why the founders in the 1790s said, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender and payment debts. And that, of course, was in the 1780s. But in 1792, the Coinage Act defined a dollar as a measurement. Now, you ask any kid on the street today, what is a dollar? And he'll pull out a piece of paper in his wallet and say, that's a dollar, dummy. Don't you know what a dollar is? Well, of course, you and I know that a dollar was a measurement of gold and silver coin. It was 25.8 grains of gold, or 371 and a quarter. Actually, it was 412 and a half. But then because they added in a 10% alloy to give the coins a little bit more stability and durability. But the point was that you couldn't, we had to have stable money, and the people in the 1780s knew that because of what happened with their paper Continental bucks. Well, you know, for the next 100 years, there was zero inflation, less than 1% inflation in this country until the Fed came along and opened their first bank in 1914. And began, because it was sold to the people as being a necessity to have a central bank and control it. What it meant was that the banksters, the elite, could get great control over the people. Also, it was very much a necessity, especially after Lincoln's War of 1861 to 65. The banksters then, with the carpetbaggers traveling south and everything else, and all this land being bought up cheap by created money, the banksters had created so much money out of paper that was unbacked, because they had discovered that when people began to trust the banks maybe a century earlier and put their coin in there and began to get a receipt being the dollar bill, they found out that people never came to claim to redeem their money. They just traded the receipts with one another. So the banksters found that about 90% of everything on hold that they had in their banks was never even tampered with. So they said, hey, what the heck? I need a new horse and carriage. I'll just write myself a note. And he cuts himself out some paper and goes and buys his new horse and carriage. And, of course, 100 years later, that became a new Buick. But anyway, the point being that by the time 1900s came along, because the fake panic of 1907 was what really provoked the idea to be sold to the American people about needing a central bank, and it took them, another 5-6 years to get it going. But the whole idea of having a Fed was provoked because we were about to see banksters hanging from light poles in the streets, because they had already created so much paper that could not be backed. They were about to get caught at it. And by the time the new bank came along in 1914 and opened its doors, everybody was confident, everybody except a few smart people like Congressman Lindbergh and others who saw right through the scheme to begin with. 1921, they faked a They faked a depression. They actually tested on themselves and them the inflation deflation buttons and switches. They gave a test in 21 just to see what they could do. And there was another panic, and they said, aha. And apparently now, as you look back in history with hindsight, this might have just been the little test run for 1929. In early 29, in May, April, May, June 29, Bernard Baruch and somehow even Joe Kennedy got wind of it. Many people that were involved in the stock market in a big way bailed out. And come, you know, October 29th or 29 was, of course, when the big crash came and so many people were left holding nothing and jumping out of buildings. But in 1930, when there was, as reported, 25% inflation going on, 25%, excuse me, not inflation, but unemployment going on in the country, if there was ever a need, if the Federal Reserve was actually looking out for the people and going to do what it claimed it was going to do in 1913 when it was being written up. When there's 25% unemployment and no money flowing to the banks, they're able to steal the land and homes. Why weren't the money ducts open? They had control to open those money ducts just as well as they have to close them down. But they weren't open because the people were oppressed, and they oppressed them further by shutting down the money ducts and forcing the people into, you know, more severe depression. And this is how they were able to pick up the farms and the homes in 32 and 33. By 1935, they had just about stripped the people barren and naked. And this is when they began to put the homes back on the market and start the system all over again by putting them out. And a $5,000 home was a very nice home in 1935. But by putting the homes back on the market and allowing people to buy cheap interest rates, they started the whole cycle all over again. And then, of course, FDR decided we needed a war to pull the country out of the depression. And wars always work because the banksters make billions with that.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's when that came along. Come along in 1945 and 46 when the soldiers were coming home. They began to ask people when they had their new jobs, what is this 1% coming out of my paycheck? Oh, that's just a little thing called a withholding. It was designed in 1942 and called it the victory tax. The nation wanted to collect money for the war effort, and so they called it a victory tax. And of course, everything was, I call it red, white, and blue fever. Everybody had it in those days. And so by the time they came home and they got, you know, the returning soldiers were saying, well, what the heck, you know, it's only 1%. I can handle that. And that is what has grown into the monster that it is today. And has forced Nice. People to file their forms and to get their withholding back. I guess, well, it's about time I took a breath, and you need to have a commercial, don't you?
Well, we have a commercial soon. You know, maybe you can talk a little bit about Gordon Call, because he's one of the very first whistleblowers as to this whole scheme that happened after World War II and the taxing thing. So, yeah, that was, to me, he was very much ahead of his times in some ways, you know, for at least with his peers. But, yeah, please stay tuned to In Defense of Humanity. We have a commercial break, and we're listening to Pat Shannon.
Extendivite. A 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. 877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Okay, welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. I'm Ingrid Castle, your host, and we have Pat Shannon as our guest tonight talking about the history of money and the future of money. So go ahead and continue, Pat. You were talking about, well, we were going to talk about Gordon Call, but I think you want to go back into the Kennedy assassination and some of the reasons for that, right?
Well, it was just the thing that led me. In 1964, I read my first book, Who Killed Kennedy, by Thomas Buchanan, and it was just a little paperback, 75 cents or something. And he didn't have a lot of answers, but he had a great many questions, and it made me begin to think. And then in September of that year, when the Warren omission came along, I was hooked for life with all the lies that were exposed by very prominent people, future presidents and every FBI and people sitting on that board. Well, in 1966, there was a book that came out called The Second Oswald. It was written by a man named Richard Popkin, who was not an investigator at all or even a reporter. As a matter of fact, he was a philosophy professor at San Diego State. But he had some great ideas about how could, for instance, in 1961, the summer of 61, there was this guy who was trying out a new car in Dallas, and with the car salesman in there with him was zooming up and down Stemmons Freeway at 80 miles an hour and drawing attention to himself and saying, "My name is Lee Harvey Oswald, and I'm going to be coming into some money pretty soon, and I'm going to come back and pay you cash for this car," and blah, blah, blah. Well, a little problem with that is in summer 1961, the Oswald that you and I knew was already in Russia marrying Marina. So that obviously was a setup by some faction. The biggest one for me was in, how can a high school kid, 17 years old, in New Orleans, of all places, one of the most distinguishable American accents in the country, but how can a kid grow up in New Orleans and 17, drop out of high school and join the Marines, allegedly go to language school for 6 weeks, and come out speaking the Russian language so fluently that when he does meet his future wife, Marina, she thinks he's a native? There's something drastically wrong with that story. And I suspected it for a long time, and I never quite believed the whole story of how big it really was and how the CIA had indeed created others, my friends and colleagues, Jim Mars and Bob Groden and other people who had been on this thing way, way back, they believed and even wrote short paragraphs about the same idea. And they're thinking the same way I was long before I ever met them. But until a man named John Armstrong came along in the 1990s, who did the most indefatigable research anybody has ever done, I think, on any subject in the history. He wrote a 1,000-page epic called Harvey and Lee, and he pointed out how Harvey was the man who went to Russia. Harvey was the one who was probably a war orphan, who had grown up in a Eastern Europe family, speaking Russian fluently, somehow was adopted into New York, somehow was found there by FBI, CIA, or somebody, and that here's a kid 12, 13 years old or so, and around 53, who speaks fluent Russian. We got to be able to use him somehow. And that's how Harvey was brought into the system. John Armstrong shows, and I did it in my book, duplicated, but we have pictures of Lee, who went to school in New Orleans, and his Lee's mother, who was quite attractive, and then the Harvey's mother, the one that you and I knew, the only one we knew from pictures and after the assassination, was also Marguerite, but she was about 4 or 5 inches shorter and heavier and dumpier, as Armstrong called her. But the pictures of the two women are obviously two different women, and the pictures of the two boys are obviously two different boys. They were melded together, probably with the help of Robert Oswald, who was already military intelligence and probably CIA at the time, and there's no doubt that he has given great assistance in the years past, the past 50 years after the assassination, because he had to have been a part of the cover-up. We know that he was part of the cover-up before the fact, even in the 50s, when he lived with both of the mothers. He lived at various times in Fort Worth with the Marguerite you and I knew, and he also lived with his birth mother in New Orleans. All these things became very, very intriguing to me, but until John Armstrong came along, and he wrote a wonderful book, and about 1999 it was published. And here, some 15 years later, nobody is paying any attention to it. So my book that I wrote, a Reader's Digest version, is called the same thing, but on the great cover up on the Sioux Owl. But it was written, it was provoked. It was not inspired.
Yep. Okay. It was provoked, the book. Okay. We're coming up on a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Hey, I'll make you a deal. Give me 60 seconds and I'll give you directions to the Fountain of Youth. Okay, I'm joking. Well, kind of joking. No fountains, but youth, I got. Nature's Youth and their premier anti-aging product, Nature's Youth RSF. With your sensible diet and exercise plan, Nature's Youth RSF can help you look and feel better. RSF is an all-natural amino acid supplement that supports your body to naturally increase HGH levels without any synthetic hormones. And elevated HGH levels can contribute to increased energy, improved libido, reduced body fat, and improved exercise capacity. Let's be honest. doesn't want to look and feel younger? Visit the newly designed website at naturesyouth.com or call 800-333-6923. That's 800-333-6923 and like them on Facebook and you'll be included in contests and exclusive offers. What a deal. Oh, speaking of deals, my time's about up. 800-333-6923 or naturesyouth.com. Who needs a fountain anyway? Call today.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. Pat Shannon wanted me to go ahead and give a plug for his special for $99. He has a special, 7 of his books that are all autographed, free shipping, plus you get 2 DVDs. You get the 9/11, the Ripple Effect that Lewis and von Kleist put out, and as well as OK City Bombing, the forerunner to 9/11. Those 2 DVDs and all 7 of his books, all autographed, for $99. So, yeah, just go to the website, iniworldreport.com, and you can go ahead and look at the books and more and get that special and support Pat Shannon and his amazing research. So, Pat, are you there?
I'm here. Hi again.
Hi again. So we're going to go back to the whole reason why JFK was assassinated. I think there's several reasons, but I think we're going to hit on at least one of them, huh?
Well, yes. I think there are about 7 that I mentioned in the Oswald book of the favorite likely motivations for the enemy to kill him. But my favorite, my number one choice was the same as Jim Garrison's was. After reading them all, I believe that it was the fact that Kennedy was pulling out of Vietnam. He was bringing home 1,000 men by Christmas and all of them by the following year. And the banksters needed a war at that time. The military-industrial complex could not stand the fact that they had come this far in Vietnam and gotten it started, and suddenly the president was going to stop it. That's my favorite motivation, I should call it, or provocation for them wanting to and finally killing Kennedy. there's not any doubt whatsoever that it was an inside job, that it was pulled off by the government, primarily the CIA, but very much aided by Secret Service agents, some of them, not all of them, and FBI as well, especially the director, Hoover, who was even part of the cover-up from with the Warren Commission, and of course with Johnson. Many tapes exist to this day. Anyway, this was the it was this case, and then the other two assassinations, big ones of the 60s, Martin Luther King, which I happened in Memphis, and I've also investigated very, very closely and have written many words about and made it mainly in magazine articles. But that's another long story that too much to go into now, but it was obviously an inside job. And the same with Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy was never shot by the pistol that Sirhan carried. It was an 8-shot Ivor Johnson revolver, and I knew the weapon very well. I happened to own one myself when I was an entertainer traveling the country and getting paid off in cash on a Saturday night. I figured I needed a little protection in the glove compartment of my car, and doggone if it wasn't the same weapon that Kennedy was shot with later, a .22 8-shot Ivor Johnson revolver. Well, the problem was there were 13 bullet holes in the room, none of which had come from his gun. The .22 were in Kennedy. Kennedy was shot three times in the back and two behind the ear. Two of those were behind the ear and with powder burns. And anybody that has read anything at all about the story or seen the pictures from the room, Sirhan was, and the witnesses' testimony, Sirhan was never closer than 4 feet in front of Bobby Kennedy. He was never behind him. And we can be sure that since the 8-shot revolver was emptied in the room into five different people and the walls, and plus five more holes, that Sirhan once again was another patsy. He himself, right, as I remember, he was under hypnosis or drugs or something at the time. He himself does not even remember the incident. He remembers nothing from 10 o'clock that evening on.
Correct. I have a very close friend who was his roommate in college during that.
Oh.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk to him sometime. He knows quite a bit. But, moving on, I think there are some definitely other reasons. One of the reasons in my mind that is looming is that he was, printing constitutional money. You know, he wanted to, he knew the power of the bankers, and he was trying to do something.
Well, Ingrid, a lot of people have mistakenly reported that he was going to print United States notes and replace the Federal Reserve notes, and that simply wasn't true. The fact was that Federal Reserve notes up until Kennedy was killed were still redeemable. The last issue of redeemable notes was in 1950, but the first issue of money, Federal Reserve notes that were not redeemable, the clause had been removed. They were nothing more than tokens. They had no value whatsoever. They were released to the public the week of JFK's funeral. What a great time to bury it in the back of the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing my first note. I would say was probably a month, not later than January, after the November 22nd assassination. And I was riding to the post office in late 63 or 64 at that time with my dad. And I had one of these new notes. And I remember saying to him, "Golly, Dad, it looks so counterfeit." And he, mm-hmm. a great carrier of red, white, and blue fever, as most Americans were, those years after the war, he said, "Well, don't worry, son. If the United States government is behind it, it's got to be okay."
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, we find that kind of laughable in these days. But what happened then was those notes that were not notes, were tokens, began to circulate. And each time one of the redeemable notes that had the clause on it, this note is redeemable or lawful money at any Federal Reserve Bank of the United States Treasury, lawful money being the gold and silver coin we talked about earlier, the dollar being the measurement, not the unit. Well, in 1965, as you know, they removed the silver from the coins and began to issue these slugs. And each time a redeemable note came into circulation into the banks, the banksters were instructed to pull them out of circulation. By 1968, there were still many of them left, but they could not be redeemed for lawful money because the banks didn't have it anymore. And so the window slammed shut on June the 24th, 1968. The banksters' window slammed shut on redeeming by trading silver quarters or halves back to the redeemer for these paper notes, very lawful notes. So it was fraud. It was a failure to comply with a contract, totally on the government's part. But they had to renege because they simply could not comply. Too many paper notes that had been printed long before the counterfeit ones came out in 63. Too many of these others had been printed over the 20th century, just like had been done after Lincoln's war in the 19th century. So they simply had to stop it and pull them out of circulation. So consequently, they talk about 5% inflation or 6% inflation. No, no. Every piece of paper with that phony Federal Reserve note on it that's not a note, every one that is issued and printed is 100% inflationary. And the same with the computer credits and everything else, the 18, 19, 20 trillion, whatever's been run up now since Obama's there. It's 100% inflationary every time one of them comes out because it is worth nothing. It's diluting, it's water diluting the milk a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all these things that were going on and with these assassinations, George Wallace, the attempted assassination, May the 15th, 1972. Here he is up there in Washington, D.C., outside in Maryland, Silver Spring, I think it was, and this guy, Arthur Bremer, says, "Hey, George, come here," and he thinks he's going to shake his hand, and he sticks a 5-shot 38 revolver, little Smith & Wesson airweight, and he shoots Wallace at least 4 times. Initial report said 5, but they later said 4. Nevertheless, there were 3 other people wounded on the scene. There was a campaign worker who was shot in the leg. There was a Secret Service agent who was shot through the throat and almost killed. An Alabama police highway patrol captain, who was George Wallace's personal bodyguard throughout the campaign, was shot in the abdomen. So if we've got a 5-shot revolver, it's fired at least 7 times. We got a pretty remarkable situation here, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Well, fortunately, Wallace lived, but his life was ruined, and of course his political career. But he had gotten 10 million votes in 68. He was threatening to get 20 million in 72, and they had to take care of him. Well, the same with Reagan. Reagan thought he was president for 9 weeks, and until he found out he wasn't. And George Bush became the president for the rest of the time, and. Reagan, I think, I just visualize people walking in the hospital room a couple of days later, dark glasses and trench coats, and saying, "Okay, bub, we missed you this time, but we got George Bush waiting in the wings. We don't need you." And I think Reagan began to figure out that he had been merely a figurehead from the start. He had been forced to take George Bush on the ticket. Well, I'm now bursting with information, Ingrid. Here I've got about 15, 20 years in all this amateur sleuthing an investigation, and if I don't start writing or talking on the radio, I'm afraid I'm going to implode. And that's when.
Well, right. I mean, you actually summarized the forgotten history of money pretty well in 33 pages in your book. I think it's about 33 pages, and everything they ever told me was a lie.
Uh huh.
I don't know if any of our listeners have that. It's a great book. I mean, you did an excellent job just summarizing it. And it reads like a novel. You write so well. I'll never forget when I got together with Don. You were one of my favorite writers of the time. I used to read you with Media Bypass. Every article you ever printed, I always gravitated to your articles because you were able to write so well, it's hard to put down. So you definitely have a gift, Pat, and you should.
Well, thank you for that.
Writing.
But what I was getting at is this is what led me up to the Gordon Call case. When that one broke in 1983, it's when I went from amateur sleuthing to professional journalism, and that's when I began to write and get paid and finally make enough to make a living as a writer. But my forte was always going to the other side. And, we read the paper today. All we hear is what the U.S. attorney told the press. We don't ever hear from the defendant. And,
right.
So when these things were happening like this, and the Gordon Call case was the first one, here's a guy who had been outspoken on the radio and TV and down in Texas back in the 70s. And he got on a talk show one time where the host thought it would be quite entertaining to bring an IRS agent, direct, what do they call the local director? What do they call the IRS head of the local office? Whatever his name is, I guess.
I'm
special. Not anyway. I don't know.
A special agent. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever they are. Yeah. But Gordon just made mincemeat out of him, and the next thing you know is he and another one of the organizers of their little tax group down there in Texas, both were railroaded into prison and gave him a year. His buddy died in prison of a heart attack, and Gordon thought they just hadn't gotten to him yet. So he went back home to North Dakota, and he settled on his farm, and he told the current U.S. attorney who came to visit him, he said, "Listen, I haven't harmed anybody, and I'm not a danger to anybody unless you mess with me." Now, this is in like 1980. He said, "I'm not reporting to any silly probation officer. I'm here on my farm, and you can bet that I'm not going to be bothering anybody unless you come over here and bother me." Well, that U.S. Marshal was the head honcho, Bud. Trying to call his last name. I couldn't find the book with all those names in it. And you're catching me with a lot of cases coming off the top of my head here tonight, but it's fun to reminisce. But nevertheless, the marshal was a decent American human being, and he agreed. He said, "Oh, you know, that's fine. We'll just, you know, we'll leave you alone." And they did until 1981, when Reagan went into office. And as you know, all the federal bureaucracy, about half of it, gets replaced or more. And so there was a flip-flop, and the U.S. Marshal's office flip-flopped the leadership, and Bud was relegated to a junior assistant marshal, or deputy marshal, they call him, and this guy by the name of Kenneth Muir, who was just the opposite as far as granting people their rights. He was a goon, and he took over as U.S. Marshal. And they decided to go after Gordon Call. And they, in fact, they even called Bud and his wife that day and said, "You know, you want to go along? We're going out there and arrest Gordon Call at so-and-so place in Medina, North Dakota." And he said, no, I don't want to go. And he hung up the phone. He told his wife, he says, "Somebody's going to get killed today." And sure enough, they surrounded him. And I spent a month at the scene, matter of fact, many years later. But they surrounded him as he was leaving a doctor's office. They were having a meeting, by the way, concerning the farmer's plight with the mortgage back in the early 80s and what they could do about that. It had nothing to do with income taxes. It had nothing to do with any kind of militia. They wanted to label him as a white supremacist, and even did so in the movie they brought out later. But they surrounded him as he pulled in a driveway on the way out of town. Daryl Graff, who has become a great friend of mine in many years, recent years since, he was the youngest police chief in the country that time, about 27, the little town of Medina. And he saw the U.S. Marshals stupidly setting up a roadblock in town in Medina, right across the street or in front of a mobile home park. And he chased them off. He later lost his job over this because the FBI went to the mayor and said that he tipped off Gordon Call. Didn't tip off Gordon Call at all. He chased the marshals out of town because they were so stupid. He didn't want to see this mobile home park get shot up and kids being killed. So he chased them a mile out of town. And then as Gordon and his wife, there were two cars, were leaving, pulled out about a half mile out of town and saw the yellow lights, blue lights, whatever they had on in those days, red, I guess, in those days, and pulled in a driveway, and the marshals came in and surrounded them. And of course, they were literally in great, they were in a circle of probably no bigger than the square footage of your house. I mean, that's how crowded they were. The cars were all pulled in, and Gordon was out, and he pulled out his Mini 14. And there was a shouting and screaming match, and his wife, Joan, told me later it was the filthiest language she ever heard, and her husband never talked like that. It was strictly the marshal screaming and trying to intimidate them. And finally, after 9 minutes of confrontation, a shot broke out, and Yori Call, 22 years old, was hiding behind a light pole, and he had a .45 automatic strapped on his he had another weapon in his hand, I think a rifle, but he had a .45 strapped on his shoulder holster right in front of his heart. And that's where the bullet hit and knocked him down and hit the handle of the .45. And that's when Gordon opened up on him, and he wounded four marshals and killed two more.
Right. Well, please stay tuned. You're listening to In Defense of Humanity. We have a commercial break.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's NumanaRepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic and Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. We're just wrapping up the first hour. My guest, Pat Shannon, we're talking about what happened to Gordon Call. And Yori Call is still in prison. He's been in prison most of his life since this incident, since 22 years old. And now he's actually, I think he'll be 55 or 56 this year. And he has committed no crime. He's fired no shot. And many people have tried to bring him out of prison. He's a really brilliant young man. It's very sad. And his Gordon's wife, Joan, I believe she's still in North Dakota. Last I talked to her, she was still in North Dakota.
Yes.
Very sad. So Pat, we wanted to talk actually more about the problems with the money system, I mean, this is really what's driving all of this insanity, is that people can get paid off. So you create a country that has no basic economy at all. You ship all the jobs overseas. The only real jobs are in the bureaucracy or the government, you know, that has all the bennies. So everyone's driven to the government, and the government's controlled by the bankers and the Illuminati and whatever that, you know, seem to be worshippers of Satan himself. And so it seems to be that all of this evil that seems to be enveloped in our country is driven by the people that are creating money and paying people off so that they can exist. And there needs to be some solution to that, the problem that's plaguing us. There's constantly people that are struggling today. The only people that seem to have money are people that are, have ill-gotten means, or, you know, people that are retired from the FBI, or, you know, it's definitely the haves and have-nots out there. You know, people are either on the dole, homeless, or subsistence, or they have no problem with money at all. And there needs to be some solutions to this inequality that's out there, that's you know, to be actually driven by the bankers. So I'd like you to comment on that and what you see as a solution.
Well, the certainly, you know, we've been in digital currency here for a decade or more with credit cards, and of course, more recently, debit cards, and the moving out of the into the cashless society. We're already well on the way there. Bill Gates himself said that, and I'm not necessarily a fan of Gates, but he certainly knows something about the monetary situation in the world. But he pointed out that cryptocurrency definitely is a coming thing. Bitcoin pioneered it. I had no idea until a year ago when Bitcoin had come on the scene at in 2009 at 10 cents and went all the way to $1,200. I was blown away when I learned this, but I didn't learn it until the improvement had come out. Something a group in business people in Europe were trying to put together, and did put together, a solution and an improvement on what Bitcoin had pioneered. I call it the Henry Ford of the monetary industry, and we can talk about that when you come back, because I hear your music now.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well, we're finishing up the first hour, listening to In Defense of Humanity with my guest, Pat Shannon.
Or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, "I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you." Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.